minutes.
I move that we approve the previous minutes as read.
I will second that, but I would like two changes. In the, in section five, it talks about past rates instead of past rates on the nursing exam. So that could be corrected. And in paragraph 2B, the enrollment and retention update should be led instead of lead. It was led by Dr. Cheryl Green, not lead by her. And otherwise, I should be fine. So.
Okay, Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee James?
Yes.
The next item is a recommendation regarding Professor Emeritus status.
Good morning, trustees. I'm Deborah Jefferson, Associate Vice President of Academic Affairs. And the only item that we have, as you indicated, is a recommendation for Professor Emeritus status for Professor Victor Sorrell, who is the Associate Dean in the College of Arts and Science and a professor in the Department of Art and Design. He's been with the university for 42 years and has a prolific history of writing, serving the university in a variety of capacities as a chairperson, a coordinator of a program, a special assistant to the dean of the college and department, worked with getting the honors program set up and with the NCATE, the summer school council, and a variety of other things, including the Latino Resource Center, a longtime participant at Servant Learning. Like I said, he has about a 37-page vita that I don't believe anyone wants me to go through at this point in time. But the department has recommended that he become emeritus, the department chair and the dean, as well as the provost. He is retiring officially August 31st.
Great. I will entertain a motion to recommend to the board that Dr. Sorrell, Victor Sorrell, be granted Professor Emeritus status.
I move that we accept Dr. Victor Sorrell as Professor Emeritus.
Second?
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee James?
Yes.
Great, wonderful.
Thank you.
And the next, I don't know if you're, are you gonna talk about the Higher Learning Commission? Academic and Student Affairs update. Is there anything else that you
want to? I don't really have anything in Student Affairs. They're doing a number of personnel change and operations going on over there. But we won't have anything resolved on how it's going to shake out until perhaps the next board meeting. And Dr. Westbrooks can provide that type of information detail. As far as the Higher Learning Commission, Paul Musial is here, and he was going to present that part of
Great.
What's going on.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jefferson. I'm Paul Musial. I'm faculty member in the Mathematics and Computer Science Department, and with Dr. Gab Mulageta of the Geography Department. We are co-chairs of the Steering Committee for the Higher Learning Commission Self-Study. The Higher Learning Commission is going to visit Chicago State University in 2013, the spring. We are charged with preparing a self-study in preparation for that visit. Even though it's 3 years out, we want to maintain some of the momentum that was started as a result of the focus visit in March regarding enrollment management. And so the Higher Learning Commission Task Force has to some extent morphed into the Steering Committee for the Higher Learning Commission self-study. So we continue to meet every Friday. Dr. Westbrooks is very active in this group. Dr. Watson also attends very regularly. And between the two of them, they give us a lot of leadership and help push this process forward. The HLC Steering Committee has done several things since it has been formed in April. We sent a delegation to Higher Learning Commission's annual meeting in April to learn a lot about how to prepare this self-study. We've met with Dr. Karen Solomon of the Higher Learning Commission to discuss our timeline, to discuss budgeting issues, and just again to get some advice as to how to plan our self-study. We've selected criteria committees to address the five accreditation criteria that the Higher Learning Commission has for accreditation. We have also prepared a response to the focus visit team. That response has been now sent to the Higher Learning Commission for full approval, and we expect hopefully shortly to get a final word from the Higher Learning Commission regarding our continued accreditation through 2013. When we talked with Dr. Solomon, it was very clear that we need to restart the strategic planning process. We need to revisit our vision and our mission and to begin the strategic planning process. And because this is so important for the self-study, we decided to organize a retreat for this coming month, July 8th and 9th, here in the fourth floor of the library. And we are inviting the President's Executive Council and many of the criteria chairs, co-chairs, and members, those individuals who will be responsible for writing the self-study together with many of the other individuals who work with the administration, the faculty, to help begin this process. And so that's the thing we're gearing up for right now. We're looking forward to that very, very much. It'll be a great opportunity for us to discuss the issues that are facing us to help. It's not to, of course, write a strategic plan. It's to begin the process, to just plan to plan, if anything else, of how we're going to do that. Another date that has been established is September 23rd. This is a date when, Thursday, September 23rd, when we will have a very open town meeting to announce to the university community that this the self-study process is beginning. Dr. Solomon has agreed to come and give us a kind of a PowerPoint presentation on, you know, what the self-study will entail and what we can expect from the next 3 years of planning. So we meet regularly. We anticipate that after this July 8th and 9th retreat, we will begin discussing in earnest the various criteria and how they apply to Chicago State University, and we will give those criteria committees their charge. So other than that, we're keeping busy. But thank you for your time.
It's a big task.
Thank you.
It's a big task, I know, on top of everything else everybody does. So, but it's a very important one at that. So I am planning to participate at least in some of the retreats.
Thank you.
And
wonderful.
But I think you told me it was July 7th and 8th. I guess we're back to 8th.
Yeah, we're back to the 8th and 9th. I'm so sorry. There were some scheduling conflicts. We couldn't get our consultant to come on the 7th. And
right. As long as I know, that should be just fine. Good. You have any questions?
No.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And also thank you, Dr. Muligeta.
No.
Is everything all right?
I just have to talk to Joy to find out if I'm here. Am I here? Not him, am I here now, but am I here? Am I here on July 7th?
It's too early in the morning to be existential.
Yeah. No, I do have the ability to be two places at the same time. No, am I here on July
7th? You're here on the 8th.
I am here on the 8th. I'm not here on the 9th.
Possibly not, but we need you here on the 8th.
All right.
Is that okay?
All right. So I'm here today. We'll find out tomorrow.
All right. We have one additional action item, but I don't see Mr. Cage here to talk about the dual enrollment. Do we need him to?
Mr. Cage?
What says Patrick Cage? Cage
oh,
here.
Oh, in terms of, oh.
The, I have some information.
No, with that, what we are in discussion with the City Colleges of Chicago. We have wanted to do it with just Kennedy King College. From what we're hearing, the feedback we're getting is that they want to do it for all seven colleges. And because I think some of the other colleges have complained, saying why are they doing them and not with all of us. So it's my understanding that it is now moving to the district level for some discussions. So it's better that we let them vet it at the city colleges, and then we approve it. But we're still moving very strong, aggressively in that direction. And what it will be is a very robust articulation agreement between City Colleges of Chicago and Chicago State.
Okay. So we don't have anything specific to approve?
No.
Okay, all right. And I guess one of the things that that I wonder about is that while we do get many of our students who come from the city colleges, whether when we're talking about this dual enrollment, will these students also get the same kind of support that first-time, full-time freshmen do in terms of ensuring their success? Because, you know, these are students that we, you know, we haven't encountered before, and, you know, I've heard some questions before about some of the preparation in some of the city colleges and things like that.
You know, what is very interesting is that the research shows that students who transfer from not just the city colleges, but just any community college, their chance of graduating is tenfold what it is for a first-time, full-time freshman. I believe that the research is showing that Chicago State University, its transfer students graduate at about a 56% graduation rate. 56%, all right? Governor State University, their transfer students graduated about a 58% graduation rate. So we're right in the ballpark of where students should be graduating. But, because what happens is that the community colleges, they, for lack of a better word, but just trying to be very direct, they basically screen out students during those first 2 years. Mm-hmm. And the students who would have dropped out, they had already dropped out. And when a student comes to us from the city colleges or from Morton or from Moraine Valley, they have, you know.
They're prepared and they're,
right.
They do well in our courses. Okay, that's great. All right, so we will look forward to hearing about the specifics of the enrollment agreement.
And, you know, I'm enjoying my president of the union. She's shaking her head like this here. And
I've taught here for 26 years. I was an academic advisor for a long time. I do have some background in this just from experience. And I disagree, but that's okay.
And I would have no problem with a public discussion on that disagreement.
Just have one question.
No, because an antidote to disagreement is one thing, but a disagreement based on research and based on broad research of community college students transferring to a university, that's not only something at the city colleges, but that is something that there is research throughout the nation that shows the level of success. So I would welcome that.
I assume you don't mean this minute.
I could go this minute, or I can go in the future.
Well, I think if there is other information, or maybe there are specific subpopulations of that group that have issues, I think that would be
true.
Important to raise during this topic, and that we, if there is a need to, you know, provide some different kind of support system than we would otherwise do, we ought to be tracking that. We ought to say, okay, we're changing this. Now, what impact is this having on, you know, what rate are these students graduating? So I think it's both worth airing any up front,
true.
And I think it's worth then tracking it and making sure that we are experiencing what we thought we would.
See, and the good thing that we have at Chicago State is that, and we just have to execute it and make sure that that we adhere to it, and that is that students who come in from another institution, regardless of if it's a community college or Harvard University, they have to take, based upon the number of hours that they're coming in at, they have to take a test. And it's my understanding it's a
placement.
Pardon me?
Proficiency.
Okay, so we have to just make sure that we adhere to that. Because when students come from another university or another or a community college, you're not going to get a perfect set. There's going to always be the anecdotal situation where you have individuals who come I've had a student come to us from Northwestern University, my dear alma mater, who I was concerned with in terms of some of their skill sets. But in general, you know, we have a safeguard in place, and in general, students who come from community colleges nationally perform, research shows, perform as well or better than students who start out as freshmen at a university. You can take this, you can apply this at the University of Illinois. You can apply this at, you know.
I just had one question. You know, the document says that students who are transferring from city colleges can bypass the normal admittance to the university. We typically enroll about 400 or so students each year. Is it possible for those transfers to now dominate our enrollment, and will we end up?
Chicago State, on the average, admits as incoming new students about 1,200 students each year. Anywhere from 600 or so of those students are first-time, full-time freshmen. And the remaining count would lead to your total of 4 transfer students. And so Chicago State has already collected and reported the data on its transfer students' academic performance. It is contained in the Higher Learning Commission reports. There are special sections on transfer students as a collective group. There's a section on transfer freshmen, and the president has already stated accurately that they graduate at higher rates than regular students and are retained at higher rates. It's assumed that their previous college experience has prepared them better for transitions into the university.
Right. My question is not related to preparation. I'm not questioning if they'll be able to matriculate properly into the university system. My question is purely, let's say half of our enrollees are transfers and the other half are freshmen. With this new system in place, is it possible that we will see maybe 75% being transferred and 25% or even a greater number than
The largest.
And then what protects our enrollment for people who are going to be provided an opportunity to come in fresh out of high school?
The question is, might be based on the assumption of one of exclusion, okay? And there will not be exclusion of our freshman class. And as we're not going to say, we're holding to 1,200. And if if more transfer students apply, that means fewer incoming freshman students can come in. We don't have a ceiling, or we don't have a cap. So therefore, if we get more transfer students, all that means is just that our enrollment went up in the university, all right? And we still will seek the maximum number of freshman students. So one number is not gonna decrease the other number. The other thing is this, from a pure profit motive, I know we're not supposed to talk about that in education, but from a pure profit motive, universities are realizing that if they want to make money, they go after community college students and not the freshman students. They go after the freshman students, but what they also do, they go after in a very aggressive way those juniors, those students who come from a community college. Because what happens is that your upper level classes thin out.
Yeah.
And you got 15, 20 students, 15 students, 10 students in your upper level classes. If you're able to infuse your junior and senior level classes with individuals who are coming from another university who is a junior, now you have a more robust junior and senior class that can pay for itself. when you do a cost analysis, you find that in a lot of instances, you know, universities are losing money at the junior, senior level. Mm-hmm. They make their money on it, you know, I mean, the freshman classes are packed. The junior, senior levels are very thinned out. So what they try to do, they're trying to figure out how do we get more students into our junior, senior level. So what they're doing is they're recruiting now at community colleges so they get students into those upper level classes.
Now for our university, I remember recently stated this at another board meeting, we have a large number of junior and senior classes, especially in the College of Business, that are sitting at their maxes, where you have 35 students, you know, per class, for classrooms that are only meant to hold about 25. Will we be adjusting by adding more courses and, you know, hiring more staff in order to, I mean, I'm not trying to kill the idea, but it's a great program. Just how will we make that work with our limited, you know, amount of space?
Well, I don't think our university is, we are getting ready to install a new software called
Ad Astra.
I can never remember that. Ad Astra. Okay. Cico Dillon, mm-hmm. our CIO, has identified a software that will allow us to schedule classes based around student need. A unique phenomenon.
Yes.
Unique phenomenon. How dare her? And that will address to a large extent,
yes,
the problem that you're talking about. We are supposed to get that in installed as a...
It's already installed. It's a matter of getting it out of piloting and operational. It's supposed to be this fall, is my understanding.
It's a two-step process. Faculty have to turn in their course.
They already have turned in 2 and 3 year schedules.
Okay.
And it's a matter now of getting the profiles for the student, what their needs are and where they are, which we're already doing with how many students are needing certain classes to graduate in a timely manner. So we're progressing through so that we'll be able to have the department chairs figure out how many sections of whatever is needed. And we're using CAP to help augment that. So there are 2 or 3 things that are going on all at the same time to better determine the selection of courses and the mix of courses, as well as the time of courses.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
Because there mm-hmm. are some times still where we have very few courses mm-hmm. offered, and other times where everybody wants to teach between 10 and
2,
Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
And the question is, and it's an age-old question, not Chicago State. Do we offer courses at the time the students need them, or do we offer courses at the time the faculty need them?
Exactly.
Age-old question, all right? We're going to address that. The second thing is that, actually, before I go on, Dr. George and I think Shereen may, I saw both of you raising your hands because you wanted to respond.
We've been talking about the transfer center in the formative stages of developing a transfer center to address the numbers, but you did answer that. And at the same time, we're reorganizing to recruit more first-time, full-time freshmen mm-hmm. to make sure our graduation rates go up as well as the retention rates. Mm-hmm. And on the other end about those seniors, you answered that too. We also are looking at students that are perpetual seniors, juniors, and seniors. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get them straight so they can get out.
Yeah.
And then we can graduate students on time.
And, you know, Romy Lowe, if you
yes.
remember, we now have created a new position in the university called Certificate and Graduation. She's the Executive Director of Certificates and Graduation. What that means is that after looking at the data, we now realize that when students reach 85 hours, it's like somebody who runs, it's like they hit the wall, which is what runners call it, and they can't push through it. And So Romy's job is when, as soon as you get 85 hours, she has a file on you. And she says, okay, what do we need to do to strategically get you to 120 hours so that you can graduate? And as a result of her doing it just for one, just for 8 months, our graduation rate went from 2% for first-time, full-time freshmen in 4 years.
Okay. Four-year graduation.
Right. The four-year graduation rate for first-time, full-time freshmen, it went from 2% to 4%. Now, you might say, oh my God, 4% is not, sure, it's not a lot. But to go from, if she had not done it, whatever number of students we had that graduated within that four-year cohort, we doubled the amount, the number of students. Because what she did was.
Well, if you're saying we have 600 new full-time, first-time, full-time freshmen every year, and 2% of them, 4% instead of 2%, you're talking about, is that 24 students or something like that?
Right.
I mean, it's 24 students who graduated who wouldn't have otherwise.
Who would not have. And what she did was, back in November, she started pulling files. And I won't mention the students' names, some of them you know. And a number of students had 160 hours. And she said, wait a minute, why are you here? You have 160 hours. Let us put this together and see if we can, and we were able to offer some courses in the intercession and in spring, and they graduated. And she did it just one student at a time, and that's Romy, you know, working her. Once we get this new software system, and Romy can work with that new software system, you're gonna start to see our graduation rate improving pretty much just off of just the way we schedule classes.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first met you, one of the things that you were complaining about is, you know, scheduling the classes, you know, talking with some of the SGA members. We offer classes this summer that we never, to my understanding, and I have the Dean of Arts and Sciences here, Dr. Lindsay. Hello, Dr. Lindsay. We offer courses this summer that we previously did not offer in the biological sciences, I believe, right? And a lot of people said, oh no, we can't do it. And they gave various reasons why. We did it, and guess what? The courses are pretty full.
Yes, one has 23 out of 25 seats, and the other one has, I believe, 13 out of 25.
So these are students who will need these classes to graduate, students who will need these classes to get into nursing, students who will need to. And if we didn't offer it this summer, because we had always made the decision.
Then another year.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And then we try to sit, then we sit back and we try to figure out why are our students not graduating in 4 years or 6 years? Yeah.
We also have been collecting from each one of the deans we have the names of the students and the number and the types of classes that they need to finish up over the next year. And so we're making sure that those courses are scheduled. I can't guarantee that they're scheduled at the time that this person individually needs it, but the course will be scheduled the fall semester, the spring semester, intercession next summer, so that they can count within our graduation rate. And, you know, you made a comment a long time ago about the transfer students here. We have historically had a very large number of transfer students. I came here in 95, and at that time, probably 70% of our student population was transfer because we are a commuter campus.
Right.
But because we now have the residence hall and we've done more in recruiting first-time freshmen, that number has become a little more equal which each incoming class of freshmen has gotten a little bit better. But we will never be like an Eastern or a Western where you will have a very large percentage of residential students because we are still a commuter campus unless we have the residence halls, which is going to change our retention SIU. What did I say? Oh, I'm sorry. I keep getting some states. I've been in all the I states.
Well, you know, based off all of the information that, you know, has, you know, become more available, I just think that it's going to be an excellent program. My main question was, because a lot of times we'll have issues in the university where we'll implement something new and not necessarily have all of the background and then all of the support systems to make it work. And this is just another example of a program that we're trying to launch where we have all of the, you know, supports and backgrounds work. Yeah, it's great.
And, you know, it's a perfect segue to the fact that we are talking about building three residence halls.
Yeah.
And I know that SGA has been strongly and aggressively and proactively supporting on this. Is this correct?
To my knowledge, yes.
That sounds like a fifth. I take the fifth. Okay. Can you check on that, Trustee James?
Sure.
All right. Because that survey is being sent out. I believe that survey is going out now. Is that correct? And
it's going to be available the same way all the other surveys have been, like before registration.
No. Can somebody explain how that survey is going out to students for the residency hall, trying to get them to fill it out? Felicia?
It's going out through an email blast as well as a link that's going to be placed on the homepage.
Okay.
And they just click on that link and it takes them right through the survey.
And it's going to be done over the summer?
I believe it's supposed to be 2 weeks.
Okay. Okay. What concerns me is that Levon doesn't know. He's with SGA.
There have been notices posted around campus the last couple of days. I was. Okay.
Well, that's probably because I intern like.
Oh,
like,
that's right.
Every
okay.
day, so I'm rarely on campus.
Okay.
As much
okay.
I used to be.
We're printing posters and flyers as well to
yeah.
help communicate.
Are we sending it to the students through an email blast or anything?
We have a separate email blast, one directly for students.
Okay.
I think we've already started talking about enrollment and retention.
If we don't have we're not ready for the resolution yet.
To justify.
We're not taking action.
You know, go. Okay.
So it's not going to move forward to the full board?
That's correct.
Good morning, Trustee Hill, Trustee James, Dr. Wasson, and Board of Trustee Representatives. I'm Dr. Cheryl Green, Dean of the Freshman Year Experience. I am here to provide information on the enrollment management report in Mr. Bell's absence. I believe there has been a 2 to 3 page report presented earlier to the trustee members, and I would like to provide selected highlights of that report. My first comment refers to the fact that there are 3,368 freshman applications as of the enrollment count for June 18th, 2010. The second report has to do with the summer school enrollment. We're very pleased that summer school enrollment is up by 9% as compared to last summer, the summer of 2009. The third point I'd like to make regarding undergraduate admissions is that while the freshman applications are extremely large, they are down by 10% as compared to this same date from last summer, the summer of 2009. There were 373 more applications at the same time last year. We have met and done aggressive planning, and we have several responses to address this. The admissions staff has launched a call campaign. They've conducted and completed over 612 calls. They have also sent over 198 emails to active prospects based on ACT scores and geographic location information that they obtained from the fall applications. And also, another partner in this initiative, which is a unit under the Division of Enrollment Management, is the Financial Aid Office. And they conducted a campaign to send out over 8,042 emails. And these were sent to students who had initiated a financial aid application, but who had not completed all of the requirements for their admissions application. So units are taking on collaborative tasks to move this effort forward to increase the number of fall applications and also the conversion of applications to admits, to enrollees, which leads me to my next initiative. 1,093 freshmen have been admitted as of June 18th, 2010. 80% of these students have emails on file and received a special invitation. We have designed a project called the Freshman Registration Project. That project will launch on tomorrow, June 26th, and also on Monday, June 28th. And the campaign included sending contacts through electronic methods to announce that freshmen can come to campus and register. We want to aggressively pursue that population of students who queried the campus, applied, were admitted, but have not taken the next step, which is to register. And so we're going to have a two-day event on campus to do pretty much anything but register freshmen, and we're very excited about that. This will not replace something that we also think is very critical, and that is the freshman orientation. This is an effort to get the students registered, and then we can woo them with all the wonderful things we do once they come back on campus for orientation in terms of engaging them and having fun and building social connections and learning more about the campus. I also want to report that I've already covered recruitment. I just finished talking about the efforts that we have launched to increase the yield rate from applications to enrollment. I also want to highlight a special effort on retention, since that's also a critical area of focus. This is an area that also reports to me in my new role, and that is the Summer Bridge Program. And we did an analysis of the students who were having academic difficulty and ended up on academic probation. And when we looked at the raw data, we found that 90% of the students who came in as University College admits who were on academic probation had never participated in the Summer Bridge Program. The Summer Bridge Program is an academic resource seminar series that's designed to increase students' ability to matriculate at the university. And what we found is that a large percentage of the students who needed that academic resource did not participate because it started before they registered. So we looked at that data and we created a response whereby we have designed a cycle two of the Summer Bridge, which starts in concert with the time when the majority of incoming freshmen who are University College admits when they appear on campus. And our cycle two will begin July 19th. We're very excited about being able to look at the patterns of enrollment for that population and to design our intervention efforts around when they need us most.
Good question.
Yes.
About the summer bridge program.
Yes.
That's a 2-week program.
No, it's a 6-week program.
Six-week program?
Yes.
Is it possible to also offer that in the fall for students who have, who placed into the lower classes but may just need that summer bridge program to help, you know?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I wasn't going to report this, but we're also working as I speak. I just sent a proposal to design something for what I call regular students who were on academic probation, and any it would also be open to any student.
Yeah.
And that is a effective study program cycle. That is the academic development series offered by the counseling faculty, and it is a set of tutorial workshops that's led by peer tutors, which focuses on improving study skills. It's not discipline specific. So any student is open to participating in that, and we will be offering that during the summer for the first time as well.
Oh, okay, so this is something completely different. But mm-hmm. is it possible to do something along the lines of what I said earlier, just offering a course specifically for the math that students can take, this course, exactly whatever it is that they do in that course mm-hmm. during the fall to help mitigate that? Because what you can do then mm-hmm. is raise 8 credit hours of financial aid that's being dumped in a developmental course for students who don't really need it. They just need a refresher.
There's a lot of discussion on that, and I give credit to President Watson because we did look at the data last fall when I started my position. And what we found was that there were a significant number of first-time, full-time freshmen who had failed the math 0990 course. We know that that is a special problem. And the way we addressed it is that the president took the leadership to offer students the ability to retake that course during intercession at no cost. We got a late start with that, and so we didn't have a high enrollment. And so those students who came in fall 2009, first-time, full-time freshmen, who did not successfully complete that course, have been aggressively recruited, reached out to, contacted, and we now have 88 of those students enrolling in this same summer bridge cycle so that they get that intensive hands-on training by the math department faculty, Dr. Lindsay's faculty and chair Atelli, I can never say his name, Atelli have collaborated with us very closely to offer that. It becomes very complex to offer it during the fall. They really need the opportunity to come into the university, take the course, see how they do, and then based on the results, get the resource. But the effective study program, which I refer to, is open to any student, whether you are not performing up to academic standards, or if you come in the door with a 23 ACT and a 3.5 GPA, and you think you would like to benefit from formalized instruction on the Cornell method, on test-taking strategies, on lowering test anxiety, on time management, then it's open. And we are trying to position ourselves to offer those cycles as often as students need them. I was going to talk about the graduation rate that doubled, but we've already discussed it. And so that completes my highlights that I wanted to present to the board today. Are there any questions?
Well, we talked about the 4-year. There was a statistic about the 4-year, but not about the 6-year. Is there anything new on that?
We do have that data. I just don't have it present. I had Garth calculate it, and what I've asked him to do is, we keep defining ourselves the way
IPEZ defines us, and that is 4 years and 6 years. We know that they're wrong to start with, okay? So what I've asked them to do is do 4 year, 6 year, 8 year, 10 year. And
and then we should be looking at that for first-time full-time freshmen and then for other students.
That's right.
So.
And he's pulling that data together. And like when you go out to 8 and 10 years, you're looking at 28% graduation rate. All right, which is quite a bit different from what.
And then that's for the freshmen.
For the first-time, full-time freshmen.
Transfer students, you're saying it's much better than that.
Freshmen for transfer is like 50-some percent. I think it's 55, 56%. But for when you take first-time, full-time freshmen, take them out to 8 years and 10 years, and I want to go out to 12 years, you're looking at 26, 28%. I won't name this the state senator, but like we have one state senator who's currently serving, who very appropriately, and he states it very proudly, that it took him 9 years to graduate. And whenever he makes that statement in a large room, you see other people from Chicago State say, well, it took me 8, it took me 9, it took me 7, you know. And we have bought into the definition of how the external world has defined us. And we just need to challenge that, you know. Not to say that we want our students to take 8 years, we're gonna push hard, we're gonna have strategies in place to make sure our students graduate in 4 years. But until we can challenge some of the external factors that affect our students, that make it possible, that requires it that it takes them 8 years, we're not gonna have total control of those social, economic, environmental realities that have a negative impact on our students.
And we're also showing that we can impact with some of the things that we do, and I think that having those statistics will be very helpful when we start to work on the strategic plan, for example, and setting our goals.
Yes.
I would just like to add that, Dr. Watson, we have collected some of that information in our HLC report, so it's available. And I just would like to reemphasize the point that's made earlier about Ms. Lowe's position and how she has a special charge to look at each cohort and what are some of the factors and barriers that could affect their ease of graduation and to remove those barriers. And I know that she's been working with academic affairs and also with financial aid to look at all of the factors that could impede the progress of students graduating in a more timely rate. So I think that those rates will definitely go up.
What is the minimum amount of classes you can take or credit hours you can take in order to qualify for full-time?
12.
Well, I just think that I'd like to revisit what Dr. Watson just said. If you are working and have to go and trying to go to school at the same time, it's real hard as I look at the math, taking 12 hours to come out in 4 years. It's just tough. And so the real issue is whether or not the students that we get in the door are capable of taking more than 12 hours and working full time.
And 12 hours with summer school.
Huh?
That's 12 hours with summer school. Because you wouldn't graduate before.
So, you got I'm looking at 96 credit hours to get out in 4 years at 12 hours. That means you got to double up 1, 2, 3 summers.
We actually request that students take 15 hours in order to graduate in 4 years. That's 30 hours a year times 4 years.
I'm clear about that.
So
what I'm doing is I'm saying that there's some external economic forces.
Absolutely.
Here. Many, you look at your student enrollment, mm-hmm. Women, single parent, having to work to try to make it through I think it's going to be tough. And I think that as we allow ourselves, and going back to what Dr. Watson said, we have to define ourselves as to what we really are and what we're capable of doing in the city. That doesn't mean that we're talking about lowering anything, but the expectation that you're going to come out in 4 years, I think is a pretty rigorous one. And I think that I sent my own daughter to school, and son. And my daughter didn't finish. She came out of one of the best high schools in the city of Chicago. She was at a top flight college, but transferring from one school to another, she ended up having to come about 5 years. And that's what it took her. Then she went into the University of Chicago and went into the master's program, graduated in two. So, but the point is that even under the best of circumstances, I think it may be rigorous to expect that our young people are going to come out in 4 years.
We looked at the data, Dr. Finney, and we found that 70% of Chicago State students stop out for 1 year or more. And that definitely directly connects with your point about the length of time. That also connects with the president's point about let's not just define ourselves by external standards. Let's look at what is happening with our students and understand them better and see how we can promote their graduation, because that is a fact for our student body. And there are a variety of reasons for that. But that's called they return, but they don't progress or matriculate straight through the academic standards. They take time out for a variety of reasons. And that in and of itself automatically extends the period from entry into the university to graduation.
I'm Patricia A. George, Executive Director of the Enrollment Management and Student Success. I wanted to speak specifically to your question about the 12 credit hour. This year, we're initiating what has come down from the federal government, the year-round Pell. So now the students can begin their matriculation in the summer, do the fall, do the spring, and do the next summer. So those are four consecutive terms, which allows them to have a better possibility of graduating in a four-year term.
And that's a good thing.
That's the best thing, and we're promoting it here at Chicago State.
And what that does is not only does it gives them quite a bit more money.
It does.
That they can get through, and it also encourages.
Because they can't afford to pay their home expenses,
exactly,
and pay for college, so they've got to be able to generate the loans,
right,
and/or grants.
That's,
yes,
right,
and the type of students we serve tend to use the financial aid as a way of living as
right,
well
yeah,
as matriculating.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're working on that, and the new direct lending process will also help our students.
So bottom line, what you're hearing is that there are a number of strategies, you know. And we pulled together a really good team. We have Dr. Green, we have Dr. George, we have Addie for admissions, we have Cherie, we have Felicia. They are all working in a very coordinated way. Vice President Bell, he's the vice president over it. You know, they are pulling themselves together and integrating their efforts so that we can really have an impact on enrollment, retention, and graduation. And now we have our director of financial aid.
Hello,
which
Brenda
shows
Hooker.
A team effort, which is what we have.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Brenda Hooker, Director of Financial Aid. Also, with the year-round Pell, it allows our students to go full-time. When the students are supposed to take 15 hours in the fall and spring,
yeah,
if they can't take 15 hours in the fall and spring, they can take six in the summer. But the Pell pays up to 12 hours. So that kind of helps our students to accelerate to the next level.
See, if we'd had that in place when I was in college, then I wouldn't have had to go to the Marine Corps to get enough money to get out of college.
Exactly, sir. Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm one of those students who took 5 years, even though I was still going here, just couldn't pay for some summer courses for my first couple of years, so it delayed a little bit my
right
graduation.
And that's one of the reasons we have more students going this summer.
Yeah.
And Romilo is working very hard to try to get those students out. The students are over 120 hours. They were able to take advantage, and some of them are able to graduate this summer. Okay, finish up their curriculum.
Yeah, but I would also caution, you know, as we look at this and we push, and we have students that push themselves to get out, there is also an emotional and health-related tax that you pay for that. And that is when you're working full-time, got a family, and going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Something is going to slip.
That's right.
Right.
All right, just we have to know that. And I don't know, I don't expect the teachers that are standing in front of the class, the students, to really get into it. But we have to have a way of understanding something that's going on in the lives of kids. One of my executive assistants is in here now. And I was talking to her on the way here, and she took 10 credit hours here last semester. I warned her, don't take 10 credit hours. She took it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's trying to pick up another 6 during the summer. She can't make it, so she's not going to go that office session, because she's got a kid working full time, trying to go to college. It's just too much. She got overwhelmed. So my point is that there's a human factor that we have to play in here. Without excusing anything, there's still a human factor that we've got to put into the calculus.
Dr. Finney, we have a full-time professional staff of doctoral-level counselors who offer free counseling to any student who runs into issues like you're talking about in terms of family issues, personal matters,
mm-hmm.
because we know that many of the things that impede our student progress
mm-hmm.
don't necessarily happen inside the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
They happen outside of the
right.
classroom.
Thank you.
And that area reports to me, and I think that's why that's an excellent relationship whereby students, I'm working on retention, and as those issues and problems come up and become identified, then there's a coordinated effort to funnel them to the resources that the university has to get them back on track so that they matriculate.
Any other questions for Dr. Green?
We have a Dr. Lindsay.
Everybody wants to know something.
I see this is all in.
Oh, pardon my laryngitis. you made a comment about not expecting faculty to get into the social issues that students bring. I know of many, many faculty who have come to me seeking direction for assisting students, who have made overtures to social service agencies to assist students, who have given students money, bought students clothes because they needed them for presentation. I am consistently impressed with the degree to which our faculty do in fact get involved in the lives of because they want them to succeed. And I just wanted to make that point that the effort is not just with the people who are responsible for enrollment management, but the effort is with the faculty
yeah.
as well.
And I hear you, and thank you very much, Dr. Lindsay, for raising that. The challenge that for every faculty member that we have in the school is how much, for whom, and how. And how can I be fair to those students?
The bigger issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's always a question of balancing
with rigor.
That's the challenge. When I was teaching in grad school, we have a little bit more flexibility than in undergrad, but it's a challenge. And I don't know. I could never figure exactly where to draw the line in terms of missing assignments because of personal issues, missing class because of missing exams because of personal issues. So you're listening at your hour or 2 hours, whatever, to the stories. And so that are good stories and important stories. And so it's always a question of how do I help this student without compromising the integrity of the core.
And I'm impressed with the degree to which faculty have figured that out.
I'm sorry?
I'm impressed with the way in which faculty have figured that out in terms of that balance. Because there are mechanisms that they can use. For example, the community we have of students, you can anticipate that proportionately there are likely to be a higher number of students who are falsely arrested and therefore are going to be out of class because of that false arrest, or students who have compromising situations with their family during finals.
It's true.
And faculty have figured out how to say, you must do this, but you can do it then as opposed to now under those circumstances.
So what you're really saying is the case by case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a precisely.
Absolutely.
The only way I could manage it was when I was to try to figure out what to do on a case by case basis.
It's definitely
that's what the counseling hours are for.
See, and the point that Dean Linsley has made is what we've been saying. The social, economic, environmental realities that affect our students, you know, there's no comparison when you look at University of Illinois, University of Chicago, you know, because that last example that the dean stated, you know, you have a student or the number of incidences where our students are falsely arrested, where they're put in situations that that are due to the conditions of the environment where they are, having nothing to do with themselves personally, it does affect their attendance in class, their ability to sustain themselves throughout. You know, the president's office is on the third floor, financial aid office is on the second floor. I don't know if that was something that when God constructed this building, it did it intentionally, but it seems like the financial challenges students have come straight up to the president's office every day. And the stories that you never, you know, every day is a totally new challenge of what a young lady or young man is being faced with to try and survive and sustain themselves. So Dean Linsley, I agree 100% with you. Our students are challenging.